You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Two Chairs No Waiting, episode number 625, Frank E. Myers. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the folks over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Drop by over at Weavers and check out some of the great Mayberry items they have there, like the Mayberry Finest Collection. That's right, you can head over and get food from Weavers. They've got Neat and Reverent Peach Jam, Country Bacon, good old store-bought hamburger dill pickles, Gracious Living Strawberry Jam. We got coffee, blackberry jam. Head over to WeaversDepartmentStore.com and check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of episode number 625 is Butch Ruffner. Thank you, Butch, and thank you for being here with me in Mayberry. It's always fun to spend time visiting and talking. I know I say that every week, but it's true every week. To get to talk about the Andy Griffith Show and just visit, and I mean, it just can't get much better than that. Last week, we talked about Frank E. Myers is not Mr. Swamp. So we went through that entire podcast last week in a desire and hope that we would be able to nip in the bud people saying that Frank E. Myers was Mr. Swamp. So far, it looks like we've done pretty well, and boy, was I glad I did the podcast last Monday night about that, because later that evening, even, and early Tuesday morning of last week, when it comes out on Tuesday, we record on Monday nights, I was actually pre-releasing the episode into some of the Facebook groups, because there were people saying, oh, look, well, I was like, oh my gosh, here's a podcast I did about last night. Read this, listen to it here, watch this video. And so hopefully with your assistance, as you went out and made sure nobody spread that rumor, we will nip this in the bud. And unlike we did with the Gloria DeHaven Aunt B situation we had a few years ago, where everybody thought, this is Aunt B when she was young, and it was Gloria DeHaven. So hopefully we were able to do that. But who is Frank Myers? That was a better question as we started looking into the fact that he wasn't Mr. Swamp. So we're going to talk about that. And we're also going to do a little bit of trivia, and we're going to hear from Randy Turner with This Week in Mayberry History. But first, I have a copy of The Bullet. I mentioned it last week. The Bullet. And it's from January 26, 1993. And I was looking through it too. This was the time frame of when CBS did the Mayberry reunion episode, actually. And inside there, in the main fold of the e-bullet, is a copy of the copy for the information about Frank E. Myers. It's called Fond Memories from Mayberry, Frank Myers. So this is a really nice tribute to Frank, and it wasn't meant to be a tribute, but this is what it says at the very beginning. I want to tell you what it says. Beloved Andy Griffith Show production manager, Frank E. Myers died on November 28th, and that would have been of 1992, at the age of 82. Through the years, Frank was always extremely gracious in sharing his career memories with others. The Bullet was fortunate to be able to interview Frank in depth about his extraordinary career in early November. So this was in 92, in November, early November. He also shared the photographs that appear in this story. And if you're watching the video version, the photographs, I'll be showing those. We are deeply saddened by Frank's death and never expected that he wouldn't be among those seeing the finished story. We hope, though, that this story will provide readers with at least a glimpse into the life and career of this remarkable man. So we're gonna go through just a little bit about this, because he was the production manager. So it was his responsibility, and he'll talk about this in here. He basically took care of almost everything related to the show. You know, he did, he made sure all the assistant producers and things like that, all that stuff was done, the assistant directors. I told you last week, Frank E. Myers, his name was Edward. Francis Edward Myers was born on December the 10th, 1909, in Tifton, south of Toledo, Ohio. Okay, we talked about that last week. He grew up in a fertile entertainment environment and often played piano for family and friends. At the age of three, he received his first newspaper recognition for his appearance in a 1913 production of Tom Thumb Wedding. Wow. But Frank went on to do many, many other things. I'll jump ahead a little bit because this is a fairly long story. If you're watching the clip here, I've got it kind of showing you what the story is. If you're watching the video version of this, if you're not, you're going to hear the story, and I'll do my best to kind of post this for everybody so that you'll be able to enjoy it. It's going to be hard to read probably because it's photos. I took photographs of it, or scans of it. So it's definitely going to be a little hard to read, but I think you'll enjoy getting to see this. So, all right. So let's move a little bit further ahead in his career just a little bit, because I think that would make it a little easier for us all to do. So here we go. Where am I? Oh, Frank worked. He worked at the Ziegfeld Girls, 1941 on video with James Stewart and Judy Garland, Heidi Lamar, and Lana Turner. And he worked with Greta Garbo in the classic Nicotica. I'm sure I didn't say that right. 1939. But a slew of westerns with Robert Taylor, including Stand By for Action, 1942, and Ambush in 1950. Other highlights at MGM were A Guy Named Joe in 1943 with Spencer Tracy, and Dragon Seed with Katharine Hepburn. He worked with everybody. As you go through this thing, he was an assistant director for Marilyn Monroe's breakthrough movie, the classic Asphalt Jungle, that was directed by John Huston in 1950. He worked on movies with Lana Turner from the time she was 18 years old until he left MGM. And Heidi Lamar, he was assigned to work on her first film with United States in 1938. Frank had fond memories of working with Mickey Rooney. This is Frankie Myers. Worked on the Andy Griffith Show. So I'm just giving you some of his background because he's going to talk about the Andy Griffith Show in a minute. He worked with Mickey Rooney on the Judge Hardy series in the late 30s. He left MGM in 1950 to design and build a ski lodge in Aspen. His engineering training, he'd gone to school to be an engineer, and that hammer had their day again, which, you know, he had been in engineering. He had purchased four beautiful lots in Aspen when he had been on location filming Devil's Doorway with Robert Taylor in 1950. And Frank and his father built Shadow Hill Ski Lodge themselves. Frank operated it until 1955 when he returned to Hollywood to work on TV. Man, this guy, he was kind of, he just could do a little bit of everything, couldn't he? So, all right, so let's move along here. So he ran a ski lodge. He'd worked on all these things. Frank's first TV show was Sergeant Pearson of the Yukon, or Preston, I'm sorry, of the Yukon. Other shows included episodes of I Love Lucy, Lassie, The Whirly Birds, The Walter Winchell Files, and Westinghouse Playhouse, Ozzie and Harriet, and The Untouchables. In 1957, Frank was tapped to direct Lost and Only, the James Dean story. Wow, I didn't know that. One scene required 4 days of preparation with 3,000 University of Alabama students. This is a quote from Frank. "My assistant director saw the task ahead and quit, leaving me alone," Frank recalled. How did the movie turn out? "Oh, it was bad. A real turkey," is what Frank said. So that's great. A real turkey. Let's see here. So Frank's distinguished track record at MGM and now on TV had not gone unnoticed. And in 1960, when Sheldon Leonard began putting together a production crew for the Andy Griffith Show, director Jay Sandrich recommended Frank as a production manager. Quote, "If nothing else, MGM production people had a reputation for doing good work," Frank recalled. Frank brought in fellow MGMers, Bruce Bilson and Bob Saunders, to work on the Andy Griffith Show as assistant directors. Sheldon Leonard and Danny Thomas had the Danny Thomas Show, which was shot before an audience with three-camera technique, but they had no firsthand knowledge with motion picture techniques or all the problems of making a show with one camera. "My experience with one camera technique proved useful. One camera TV was exactly the same as making a movie, except it was just 24 minutes. Frank accepted the job." That was a quote from Frank, by the way, so you'll know that. During the same time, Frank was also the production manager for the Dick Van Dyke Show, from 1961 to 66, the Bill Dana Show from 63 to 65, and three seasons of Gomer Pyle USMC from 64 to 67. The launching of That Girl, he was involved in, and the first two seasons of I Spy. Though Frank had many fabulous memories of his MGM years, he always said that his seven seasons working on the Andy Griffith Show were his favorites. Here's a quote. "It was the highlight of my career. They were the happiest years because of the high caliber of both creative and performing artists under the Thomas Leonard banner. And working with Sheldon Leonard, Aaron Rubin, Dick Link, and the rest of the guys, it was just great. And all the great writers, the root of any series success, wonderful people. Those were happy days," end quote. Time and again, Frank would recall with the greatest admiration the work of the Andy Griffith Show cast and crew. Quote, "Brilliant," is what he said. Brilliant work. Aaron Rubin and the writers were absolutely the best. They created such good characters, all of them. They don't do that today. End quote. Frank worked with so many of the best performers in Hollywood that it's hard for him to pick a favorite. Here's a quote from him, quote, "But without question, I'd say Clark Gable, Robert Taylor, and Andy Griffith, who is a top drawer in every respect," Frank said. One of his favorite stories was one of his first meeting with Ron Howard. It's, quote, "Jean," that's Ron's mom, "brought Ronnie to my office so we could meet. Ron wasn't quite 6 years old. It was in early 1960. I asked him how tall he was, and he didn't know. I stood him against the door frame of the office and made a mark. The mark was 46 inches from the floor. He was absolutely the greatest kid in pictures. And I worked with a lot of them. Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland, Lana Turner, Margaret O'Brien, Liz Taylor. Ronnie," he added, "had great parents. Rance and Gene made sure everything was handled correctly. And his school teacher, the late Catherine Bartons, was an exceptional woman, end quote. As production manager, it was Frank's job to take care of the details and bring each episode in on budget. Quote, anything except talent was my responsibility. Assistant directors, writing, props, wardrobe, catering, etc., were all part of the cost that I had to supervise. We'd take each script and look at how many sets and locations it called for, and we'd do a complete breakdown. If there were too many sets, for instance, we'd get the writers and cut scenes that were going to cost too much or just weren't worth the money. Then once it was set, you'd get the art director and look for the best ways to cut cost. And again, continue to get input from Aaron Rubin and the writers. The key was to maintain a high quality, but keep the cost of the show down. That's ends his quote. Writer Harvey Bullock recalls that he and his partner, Ray Saflin, Ray Allen, sometimes would deliberately provoke Frank with wild, impractical scenes just to be entertained by Frank's reaction. On one occasion, they took out a page of their rewrite of a script and inserted a page that called for Andy and Barney to race through a huge forest fire. Frank detonated just as the writers had hoped, and then shared a good laugh when they revealed the prank. That's great. Sometime later, the writers inserted a phony page in another script, this time calling for a chase scene with a huge bridge collapsing into a raging river below. Not to be fooled twice, Frank responded with what Harvey Bullock describes as, quote, a proper little memo from him politely inquiring if there was any special color we would like our huge bridge to be painted. Wow, you know that, getting off of the script here a little bit, isn't that nice to hear? Because the people on the Andy Griffith Show, as they were making the show, they enjoyed each other's company enough that they could pull little pranks on each other. And it was a good relationship that they had. And I think that's part of the reason we see such amazing stuff happen on the Andy Griffith Show is people like Frank E. Myers and the writers and stuff. That's commentary by Alan. Let's move along. You'd rather hear about these. Here's as Harvey, quote, Frank was one of those memorable behind-the-scenes magicians who received little applause yet performed major and minor miracles week after week to make the show flow and go. Every time I see his name in the credits, I can't help but grin and remember what an affable spirit he was, end quote. One of the things Frank was proudest of was finding the location for the opening credit sequence of the Andy Griffith Show. Quote, Andy, Sheldon, Aaron, and I were sitting around trying to figure out what to do for the opening of the show. They were afraid that they'd have to go far away somewhere to get what they were looking for. I said, we can do it right here. I know a beautiful spot. It can't be, they said. Take us up there. Well, I did, and they were mouth opened, but I knew of the spot, not far from downtown, even from some commercials that I'd shot over the years and from Lassie episodes. It would be familiar to Andy Griffith, too, because scenes from No Time to Sergeant were shot there as well. The location was Franklin Reservoir in the Coldwater Canyon. It still looks much the same today, just with a few more trails and picnic tables than 30 years ago. Of course, this was now 60 nearly years ago. For years, the Andy Griffith Show fans have assumed that Myers Lake on the show was the takeoff of the real Myers Lake, Lake Myers in North Carolina. Maybe now we will know even better reason that the body of water near Mayberry might have been called Myers Lake. Never thought of that. Myers Lake is because Frank Myers is the one who found it. Wow. Nice, Jim. I'm sure I knew this at one point, but I'd forgotten it. So there's your little tidbit for this episode, guys. Let's see. Frank also confirmed that the name Frank Myers for the character in Mayberry, it's on the episode Mayberry Goes Bankrupt, episode 39, is named for him. He quote, the writers used to joke that actor Andy Clyde, 18 years older than Frank, was cast for the part because he looked just like me. I was tickled about the whole thing and even took the mailbox we used home and set it in concrete. Oh, isn't that great? Frank Myers took it home with him. After 30 years in show business, Frank retired from production manager in 1967. He enjoyed his retirement every bit as much as he did his tremendous career. He was an avid golfer and commented how much he enjoyed a set of Arnold Palmer golf clubs that Andy Griffith gave him as a retirement gift. He also thrived on both relaxation and excitement of Tahoe, Lake Tahoe area, where he had owned some cottages and other properties. Isn't that, I just think this is great. Even years after the Andy Griffith Show production ended, Frank was always delighted to hear news from old Mayberry friends like Betty Lynn, Hal Smith, Maggie Peterson, Richard Link. He said he read constantly and kept up with folks and what they were doing. He said he also continued to watch reruns of the Andy Griffith Show and Dick Van Dyke on local station in the Sacramento area, where he made his home after retiring. Frank Myers was truly a modest man, equipped with great talent, charm, and good humor. Even though emphysema severely limited his physical activity in his later years, Frank maintained a powerfully positive outlook on life. You could tell, even from his letters and phone conversations, that he greeted each day with total joy and thankfulness. Quote, he was a terrific fellow and a good friend, said Richard Link. All the years I knew him, he was very jovial. Production manager is a tough job. He always kept his cool, and he still got the job done. He really ran a good ship. Everybody liked him, and only had good things to say about him. Isn't that nice? So there's more. There's a little bit more here, but this is how we're going to remember Frank E. Myers, a man whose genuine friendliness and enthusiasm and kindness were always so great that I almost forget that I never met him in person. That's what Jim Clark said. That is, until I realize there will be no more letters coming from in the Mayberry mailbox that says Frankie Myers. He was survived by his son, Chuck, his sons, Chuck and Tom, and his sister, Mary. So that's basically the entire story and the thing. But Frankie Myers, ladies and gentlemen, he was that's who he was. So he wasn't Mr. Swamp. As important as Mr. Swamp is for us as Andy Griffith fans, Frankie Myers is the one that helped pull off all these amazing memories that we have from the Andy Griffith Show. So thank you, Frankie Myers. We really appreciate you. He got to do so many things and was just a part of so many things. There are photos in the bullet that are of him with Lana Turner and his wife at the ski lodge that he and his father built. That's there. There's a picture of Carl Reiner and Frank E. Myers. Carl Reiner, you may remember. You may know him. And, of course, there's one of his son Chuck and Tom, and then just one of him as well. So there's some really nice pictures in there. I'll try to post these pictures on our Facebook page, or you can see them in our video feed. All right, guys, that's all I got there. So let's move along now to some trivia. Everybody's ready for some trivia? So let's play a little trivia music. Let's see. Here we go. Trivia time. Everybody get their pencils out. 5 questions. Here we go. I'll try to watch our chat room as we record this live. If you'd like to be a part of the live version of the show, you can join us on Monday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern time. Monday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. You just go to live.2chairsnowaiting.com, or you can just go to 2chairsnowaiting.com and click the live link that you'll see there. All right, so here we go. We got 54 folks in our chat room. Let's see how they're going to do. Number one, which of Opie's friends was with him when he found a baby on the courthouse steps? Oh, this is harder because that's color. Which of Opie's friends was with him when he found a baby on the courthouse steps? Well, wait, was that color? I guess it wasn't color. I don't remember. I'm seeing it in black and white, but I think it was color. All right. Which of Opie's friends was with him when he found the baby? If you don't want to know, you can pause. It was Arnold. Arnold was his friend that was with him. Good job. Folks in the chat room are getting it. It was not Carl Reiner, as some in the chat room are saying. Carl Reiner was not correct. Number two, what was Millie's last name? Ooh, another color. Color one. What was Millie's last name? Millie. Yep, these are two color episode questions in a row. What was Millie's last name? Her last name was Hutchins. All right, hope you got that. Hutchins, Millie Hutchins. All right, that's two questions. There's only three more, so everybody get ready. All right, what was a number two Amber Alert? What was a number two Amber Alert? Yeah, this one's a little hard, but it's not color, at least. A number two Amber Alert. You can pause if you don't want to know the answer. The answer is what is a number two Amber Alert? It's Andy or Barney awake at all times. Andy or Barney awake at all times. All right. So number four, just got two more questions here. Number four, what game was Johnny Paul playing at the carnival when he won a baseball bat? What game was Johnny Paul playing at the carnival when he won a baseball bat? All right. That's how you got to think about it a little bit, but okay, here comes the answer. What game was Johnny Paul playing at the carnival when he won a baseball bat? He was playing the ring toss. The ring toss. Yeah. All right. Number five. It's the last one. Ring toss. Folks are getting it in the chat room. I see them. Number five. How many jars of miracle salve were sent to the tailor's house? How many jars of miracle salve were sent to the tailor's house? This is a good one. This is one you got to know if you're in the Mayberry trivia and real serious. I didn't know this. I don't know that number. But this, how many jars of miracle salve were sent to the tailor's house?
Hello, my name is Opie Taylor Sr.
I can't do it. How do you do that with your voice? I can't do it. All right, the answer is 946. 946, and folks are getting in the chat room. Good job. 946. So how did you do? All right. Hope you did pretty well. And even if you didn't do well, did you have fun? That's the main thing. Are you having fun trying to answer them? It's always fun to me just to try. You know, if you get a two or three or one, at least you feel like you're not a terrible player. All right. So let's head over now and hear from Randy Turner. I know you're going to like this. All right. Take it away, Randy.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
In the 12 months following my report in the Two Chairs No Waiting podcast number 573 on the introduction of the musical mountain family The Darlings, and The Darlings Are Coming, I've done reports on three of the four band members. Check out episode 574 to hear about mandolin player Dean Webb. episode 582 to hear about guitarist Rodney Dillard, and episode 589 to hear about MC and bassist Mitch Jane. This final report wraps up this extended series that began nearly a year ago. Doug Dillard was born on March the 6th, 1937, in East St. Louis, Illinois, though he and younger brother Rodney grew up in Salem, Missouri. 5 years older than his younger brother, Doug took to a musical instrument first, influenced by his own parents' musicality, though he usually only saw them on the weekends as they both worked in East St. Louis, 125-plus miles away from Salem. Doug recalled that his parents took him along on a trip to Nashville to see the Grand Ole Opry when he was only one, but he still recalled seeing Uncle Dave Makin's animated style of playing, where he would even throw his banjo up in the air at times. Doug began learning guitar and fiddle, the instruments his parents played, when he was only five. At the age of 15, he got his first banjo and taught himself to play, not realizing banjo players use picks on their fingers. Naturally, one of Doug's banjo heroes was Earl Scruggs. He wrote to Earl and eventually convinced his parents to drive him to Earl's house in Nashville. It says much about Earl Scruggs that he invited the young man and his parents inside, gave Doug an impromptu banjo lesson, installed Scruggs tuners on his banjo, which allows a banjo player to accurately change pitches while playing, and even gave him some of his own picks. While still in high school, Doug and his brother played first in their group, the Ozark Mountain Boys, then later played in the Dixie Ramblers. The latter group also included a young John Hartford, who had often played fiddle with the Dillards' father. Doug developed into an extraordinary banjo picker, but he did not initially attempt music as a career. He attended Washington University in St. Louis, then worked as a bookkeeper. When Doug got a phone call from his younger brother Rodney, who had enrolled in college but quickly decided he instead wanted to pursue a music career, Doug did not try to talk him out of leaving school. Instead, he suggested they team up and pursue playing professionally. After recruiting Dean Webb to play mandolin and teaching Salem disc jockey Mitch Jane to play bass, the foursome traveled to Los Angeles. They were quickly spotted performing at a local club by a scout with Elektra Records, which signed them to a recording contract. Before their first month passed in Los Angeles, they were also cast as the Darling Boys in the Andy Griffith Show. The Darling Boys were generally unnamed, but in their initial appearance, Doug's character was named Jebin. In their final appearance in the show, Andy Griffith instead called them by their real first names. Doug's virtuosity on the banjo did cause one problem on their first Elektra album, 1964's Back Porch Bluegrass. Early reviewers of the album attacked both the band and the record label, accusing them of artificially speeding up their recording to make the banjo playing seem impossibly fast. Of course, that was actually just Doug's amazing ability. The Dillards eventually played a more progressive form of bluegrass, dubbed Newgrass, which included drums and electric instruments, but their traditional chops were often still used. Doug and Rodney played on the soundtrack of the 1966 film Bonnie and Clyde, which used Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs' Foggy Mountain Breakdown as its theme. In 1968, Doug played banjo on Glen Campbell's hit recording of old friend John Hartford's song, Gentle on My Mind. As the Dillards evolved, Rodney wanted to change the style of the music they played to such an extent that Doug left the band in 1968. He initially joined the Byrds on a European tour and then partnered with Gene Clark, one of the founding members of the Byrds, to form a new collaboration, Dillard and Clark. While Doug and Rodney parted ways due to a difference of opinion on their approach to music, this does not mean that Doug did not also hold progressive views on bluegrass. The Dillards had been using electric instruments and drums years before he left, and his new partnership, Dillard and Clark, also blended banjo and fiddle with keyboards and electric guitars in such a way that they also were an important component in the development of country rock and a seminal influence on bands such as Poco and the Eagles. Doug did not do extensive acting, other than his 6 appearances in Mayberry, but he did appear as a band member in Bette Midler's 1979 film The Rose, and played Clem, the banjo player, in Robin Williams' 1980 comedy Popeye. Doug did reunite with Rodney to appear in the 1986 television movie Return to Mayberry, and they still performed together upon occasion throughout the rest of Doug's life. Doug's 1989 bluegrass album, Heartbreak Hotel, received a Grammy nomination, and in 1992, Doug was inducted into the Society for the Preservation of Bluegrass Music in America. And in 2009, the Dillards were inducted by the International Bluegrass Music Association into the Bluegrass Hall of Fame. Doug passed away in 2012. Well, that's it for this week. And that's it for this nearly 12-month look at the Dillards as a band and the 4 original members individually. As always, thanks for listening. And remember to take care of yourself, take care of others, and take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
Wow. Thank you, Randy, for that great report. Man, he just keeps coming up with great stuff. If you want to make sure you don't miss out on any of what Randy's doing, send him an email at turnersgrade@gmail.com, turnersgrade@gmail.com, and he'll keep you informed. So, Randy, thank you. And I want to thank all of you who are listening or watching the podcast. Thank you for being here. I want to thank you for taking the time to just spend with me. Those of you who are patrons, I have patrons that are donating to the podcast to keep it going. I want to thank them as well. If you'd like to do that, that'd be wonderful. You can head over to patreon.com/2chairs and you can limit how much money you give me. You can say $1 an episode and no more than $2 a month or something. However you want to do it, I appreciate it. And if you can't do that, just go out there and tell folks about it, because we're trying to spread the Mayberry, just the whole spirit of everything, just to keep us all going. It's so fun to be able to pull these articles, amazing things that Jim Clark over the years has done. I want to thank him again for that, just for, you know, just for keeping those, all this Mayberry information alive for us all. Wow. What a wonderful gift he has given us in doing that. So I just want to thank him and thank Randy for all the fun he's been doing. Head over and make sure you don't miss out on his book, Mayberry First. You can get that at Weaver's Department Store. Mayberry First. You can go over and check that out at Weaver's. It's a great book. He sent me something that was a correction from last week, and I just don't remember what it was. Dadgummit. I should have looked that back up. But it's in his book, Mayberry First, so you'd be able to see it there, whatever the answer was. I'll find it for next week. I'm sure Randy might remind me, but I've got it. I just forgot. So, folks, it is always great, as I said, to be here with you. I hope you enjoyed yourself. I enjoyed myself here in town. So I'd love to hear from you. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415, or you can drop by 2chairsnowaiting.com, and there's all kinds of information there about how to get back with me, give me information. It's just really wonderful to hear your voice, so I like for you to call in. You can email me. That's there, too. But, folks, I just thank you again for spending time in Mayberry with me. I hope it's fun for you. Hope you're enjoying the trivia. Some of the folks in the chat room said trivia is too hard. They're not enjoying it. Trivia is not stress-free, is what they say. So until next time, folks, study up on your trivia a little bit, and we'll see you right here on 2chairs. Good night, everybody.